building for local staff. And with LGAs and CSOs and other local organizations in country, they provide support to households, such as economic support, nutritional support, and support to individuals, such as the most vulnerable children who need school uniforms. They also provide home-based care for those who are HIV positive and community awareness raising, such as HIV prevention and child protection issues. So how are these services provided? Historically, they've been provided by the international implementing partners who have provided services directly to households. But in Tanzania, we're beginning to change this approach. And the international implementing partners are now doing subgrants with local CBOs and building capacity of these local CBOs to be able to manage such contracts. And the local CBOs are now providing the services directly to the households with most vulnerable children in them. What we still have as part of the model is the unpaid volunteer, who is actually the individual that is providing direct services to the households. So what are these programs required to report? In Tanzania, they have four indicators that they report on. One is the number of eligible clients who receive food and/or nutritional services. The other one is your PEPFAR indicator, the OVC, who received a minimum of one core care service. The other one is the number of eligible and children provided with home-based care services. And then lastly is the number of households with at least one OVC or MVC or a person living with HIV with a minimum of one economic opportunity or strengthening support service. So this is what in Tanzania the OVC partners are reporting on to USAID, Tanzania, or DOD, or CDC. So Measure's been working with OVC programs in Tanzania for about 4 years now, and we have been using the same approach that we've used even with the facility-based partners to kind of assess M&E capacity. It's a three-stage approach. It starts out with a data quality assessment, which looks at the M&E systems, the procedures and policies in place for M&E, and the staff that are in place for M&E. Then it also looks at the data flow all the way down from the service delivery point up to the headquarters onto USAID and where they aggregate the data at each point along the flow. And then it also does, we do re-aggregate the numbers all the way from service delivery or grassroots level for community up to when they submit it to USAID to see if the number being reported to USAID is the same number that we're finding in their registers and reporting forms. So that's the first step. But then we have a second step. So we take the DQA findings and we come up with M&E capacity building plans. For things that are cross partners, we often hold M&E workshops. So it's kind of an M&E 101 where you're going over your basics of M&E, such as indicators, you know, data collection forms, data flow, and some other general M&E terms and terminology. Then we also do some one-on-one mentoring and capacity building, because what we found is the workshops in and of themselves often don't lead to building the M&E capacity and then being able to take the skill set back to their office and implement it. So we set up one-on-one mentoring at their offices and help them integrate it into their office setting. And then for more advanced IPs who score really well on their data quality assessments, we have more advanced trainings in GIS and data demand and use. And after about a year of providing capacity building, the ones that perform not so well in the original DQA often get mini DQA'd the following year to see if there's been improvements in their systems and in their verification factor of what they reported to USAID versus what is in their records on the ground. In doing this with the OVC programs, we've realized that this facility-based model, especially the facility-based model for reporting, has not necessarily worked in community-based programs. Community-based programs such as OVC do not have the physical infrastructure. There is no building at the service delivery point where somebody can sit when services are delivered and enter data into a database. There is a lack of human capacity, even when there is a building at the district level where they can enter data and all the data is sent to be entered into a computer. So you just can't take a facility-based model and put it on a community-based program. They just don't have the infrastructure or human capacity to do such. And so what we've seen in doing this is that there's multiple levels of data quality issues along from starting from the grassroots all the way up to the headquarters located in Dar es Salaam or some other city, such as Arusha. We start off with the data collection, and I mentioned that this is often done by unpaid volunteers. And a lot of these volunteers are low literacy. They may have completed primary school, they may not have. They've been given lots of papers where they're supposed to go to the household and collect information, and they don't understand why they have to collect this information. Oftentimes they don't even fill out the information at the household because they feel then they have to provide something. There's a level of expectation from the household if they start writing things down in the household. So they often wait till they've left the household to fill out the forms. And as we know, recall is not fantastic. Data entry is an issue. As I mentioned, it doesn't happen until you get to the district level at a lot of times for these programs. And it's expected that a district social welfare officer will be entering this data into a database. This person is already responsible for providing services to most vulnerable children, the elderly, the disabled, and marriage counseling. And now they're supposed to enter in 2,000 to 20,000 kids' names into a system. It's just they don't have the time. They're already overtaxed. And then data analysis and data use. Well, there's really no data analysis skills at the district level, and very little even at the national level. And a lot of them don't understand what the data is for. They think it's just to be reported to USAID, Global Fund, or whomever else their donor is. So there's a lack of understanding as to how the information can be useful for them in improving their programs. So Measure Evaluation Tanzania has taken a look at some of these challenges and gaps, and we've tried to come up with some tools that can help address some of these areas. And the first one that we developed, that's about a year and a half ago, is the Community Trace and Verify tool. So what is the Community Trace and Verify tool? Well, it covers the minimum package of services that OVC are supposed to get, such as food and nutrition, shelter, family-based care and support, social protection and security, primary health care, psychosocial support, and education, vocational training, and household economic strengthening. And in the tool that we've developed, there's at least one indicator for each of the eight areas to assess, are these households receiving the services that they say they've been receiving in the registers at the IP or the CBO who's providing services? It's a very short questionnaire. We timed it during our pilot. It takes about average 10 minutes. The longest it took was about 18 minutes to implement, and that's when a caretaker had to go find a birth certificate or an immunization card, and she had to go back and dig through some things. It uses lot quality assurance methodology, so this makes it a rapid type of assessment. We often would sample 40 households in a village because we found the list aren't the most up-to-date, so sometimes you couldn't even, if you just selected 19, you couldn't necessarily find the 19. So we oversampled, and then when we got to 19, which is kind of the magic number for LQAS, we could stop the households. And then we came up with the percentage that we wanted to get, which was, we said we wanted 65% of the households to say yes, they had received a service for that indicator to have passed. And that was a threshold we were comfortable with the OVC programs at this point in time. So that means that about 9 households had to have said that they had received that indicator for that indicator to have passed. And this is just an example of what the tool looks like. So you can see different, such as birth certificate, community health fund card. Have they been visited by somebody from the Most Vulnerable Child Committee, which is the group in Tanzania that oversees some of the volunteers at the village level. And it has yes, no responses and skip patterns too within it. And these are the indicators then we say, if 9 said yes, they had been enrolled in the community health fund, then that indicator would have passed. If not, that indicator would have failed, and the program would know that they needed to go back and do some capacity building and strengthening around community health fund cards. So what have we done so far with the Community Trace and Verify tool? We piloted it with AfriCare in two of their villages. And then we worked with World Education International in implementing it with some of their villages. I think we piloted it with them with two, and they were implementing it in their work plan to do it further. Also this year during the DQA, we are doing PACT, and to do when we do the spot checks, we will actually be using the Community Trace and Verify tool this time rather than just a rough spot check. So we will actually implement the full tool in at least two of the PACT villages. We have been working with the Department of Social Welfare, who oversees the National Most Vulnerable Children Program, and incorporating it into their M&E system. And we're in the process right now of developing their new national M&E system, and it will be part of that and rolled out to the lower levels. So that's kind of looking to see if services are being delivered and if the data quality is good, and with what's in the register is really what's happening at the field. But then we also deal with, like I mentioned, the lack of how to use data and the lack of ownership at the lower level. So we brainstormed about that a bit and came up with modifying some participatory monitoring and evaluation tools that a colleague of mine had been using at another job of his that was grassroots level. And so what is participatory M&E? It uses low literacy tools so that we can use it with the community volunteers or the community groups that are supporting most vulnerable children. The groups that we bring together, they identify the priority areas based on the activity that's being implemented. So they have a voice in saying, this is a priority area for us in this village, and this is what we want to work towards over the next 6 months, a year. And then they establish progress indicators so they can monitor, are they reaching their the targets that they set for their priority areas? So they can set them quarterly, they can set them semi-annually, and then the CBOs that are then working in the areas can then follow up with the volunteer groups or the community groups to see, are they reaching their targets? Are they on track? And so when they establish priorities, it's a four-level system. And we use these pictures, and the top one is like a seed. So we're working on a tree. We're growing a tree. And so the first, the lowest priority area would be the seed. And the next is when the tree is a sapling. So the seed's grown a little, but it's still just a sapling. It hasn't had much, it's not considered really a high priority. It's still very little. And then the next level is it's a tree. It's actually grown to a full tree, but it's not fruit bearing yet. So it's a high priority, but it's still not their highest priority. And when we get to the point where the tree is fruit bearing, that's what the community then considers their highest priority area for that they want to start to address within their community. And so then, as you can see, this is part of the tool. And on the left-hand column, they list their objectives or values for that community. So what areas in OVC, or I think this is an HBC program, do they want to work on in that community? And then the members vote. And so you can see, for, let's say, community home-based care service providers available when needed. Two people said that was a very low priority. That's not really high up on our list of things we want to do. Four said it's a bit higher, but it's still not what we want to focus our attention on. Three said it was a pretty high priority, and one said this is the highest priority that we need. So this is all voting, and they have little, like, jars that you take, and you put the pictures of the seed, the sapling, the tree, and the fruit-bearing tree, and then they write down and they stick their things in their different jars. And then everybody counts them up afterwards, and we fill out this table. So then we can score and rank the different areas so we can see what the community wants to focus on and help them work on focusing on those areas. You can get the average score. So what scored the highest on the average, you can see that would have been availability of antifungal drugs for this model. But then also you have the percent highest priority. The percent highest priority is how many of the people actually scored it as a fruit-bearing tree. And the one that ranked highest in terms of the most votes as with the fruit-bearing tree, or the highest priority, is clients recovery from loss to follow-up. So this is just a simple way to rank their objectives and their priorities for the community and to decide what they want to focus their attention on as a community, set targets, and have the CBO follow up with them on a quarterly or semi-annual basis to see if they're reaching them. So what we've seen, because we've implemented participatory M&E, we've piloted it with two organizations in Tanzania so far, an OVC program and an HBC program. We've seen it's easy to implement, and the volunteers and the community groups that we've worked with have really gotten it. Local governments gotten involved at the VEO, and they really like it, and they're like, oh my God, we didn't know this was even happening, you know, within our village. So it's been even an advocacy tool to the VEO. It's creating community ownership. They are actually following up and doing it and working with the CBO and seeing if they're reaching their target. And as I said, it's setting the stage for follow-up and ownership of it. So they have some sort of accountability to the CBOs that are operating, you know, because they sit there and they're like, we're going to set these targets and we're going to work on them. And the CBO says, yes, you have. No, you haven't. We need to do more work on this. So what has Measure Tanzania seen after working with community-based programs, OVC and HBC, over the past 4 years? We have seen increased M&E budgets within the IPs. Some of them are actually getting budget line items, whereas before they didn't have budget line items for M&E. There's more M&E staff on the ground. They're having bigger M&E teams. We've now seen often where there's an M&E director and then some M&E associates under that person. We're seeing that subgrantees are even having M&E staff being hired onto them. IPs are starting to conduct their own data quality assessments to make sure the data is of good quality that they're reporting up to USAID and that they're using for decision making at headquarters level. And we're seeing more supportive supervision and capacity building happening of the subgrantees at the lower levels. But we still have challenges. Currently, there's often a lot of pressure to expand service delivery, and less attention goes to M&E because they're so focusing on reaching out as far as they can reach out. So whether it's national or they're supposed to go through a whole zonal approach, there's often a lot of attention in them expanding their service delivery, sometimes at the expense of M&E, that they've like, oh yeah, we hire these M&E people, but okay, we got to expand, and okay, you just deal with reporting right now. So some of that's happening. Data collection, as long as it is reliant on unpaid volunteers, it's never going to be good quality data. We've got to find a way to start doing some sort of remuneration for these people that are collecting the data at the lower level. Overly ambitious targets. Tanzania is divided into a zonal approach for OVC, where one IP is responsible for each zone. And in each zone, they are supposed to reach 150,000 most vulnerable children. There are 5 zones currently under USAID, so that can give you a picture of how many kids they're supposed to reach over the 5-year program that's currently being implemented. And there is high-level demand for detailed reporting. USAID wants detailed reporting, and then the government of Tanzania is also wanting detailed reporting. So this is more than a volunteer or a district social welfare officer can really handle. It's just overambitious right now. It's still that facility-based model being placed on a community-based program. So the question is, can we continue to use this model? Or should we come up with a new approach? We've been talking a lot with USAID Tanzania, USAID Washington, about the possibilities of shifting the model a bit, taking it out of the facility-based model into a model that is appropriate for community-based programs. And it's kind of a 3-pronged approach. We would still have volunteers do their case management. They still go to the households and visit the households, so they still need some sort of case management tool to know what services they've delivered, what referrals they've made, and to be able to follow up with the households and see what's going on and if improvements have been made. But volunteers, we don't think, should be required to continue to collect routine monitoring data. So what we are proposing is to do a semi-annual or annual cluster sample survey to track the coverage and monitoring data. And this would be working with maybe parasocial workers or some other group and doing 30 cluster sampling maybe twice a year with a short amount of indicators, a 1-2 pager, and then we can get the data that we can rely on. We feel the quality would be better than having a volunteer go out and collect the information. And it would free up the volunteers to be able to actually focus on service delivery. And then the parasocial workers just twice a year can then do the routine monitoring data, and we can extrapolate up to the district level to figure out. And then lastly is our representative population surveys to measure change in status. So this is the DHS, the THMIS, or MIS-AIS surveys that are done every 2 to 5 years. Tanzania does have a DHS every 5 years and a malaria indicator survey, AIDS indicator survey in between the two DHSs that does have an OVC model in it. So we can be able to get the data that we need to see change in status through that. So this is the new way forward that we're kind of promoting, and we're doing a lot of thinking about and we're talking a lot with USAID to see about making these changes and to make sure we start getting better quality data on these programs so we can start making decisions about them, USAID can start making decisions, the IPs, the government of Tanzania, and even taking the data and feeding it back to the district and helping the district understand how they can use the data, but they're not so overwhelmed trying to input the data. They can be freed up to use it. And we think this could actually help make some changes in the M&E systems of the OVC and other community-based programs. So that is the conclusion of my presentation. Thank you, everybody, for listening. So if anybody has any questions, we will be free to take those at this point in time. Tara?
You guys can ask questions, or people can type.
So, Dawn, I have a question. How does, when you talk about the participatory M&E approach as something you're experimenting with, how would that kind of mesh and complement this semi-annual or annual survey you're talking about?
Right. Well, I think that would still, so Tara asked about how the participatory M&E would complement the semi-annual, annual cluster sample survey that I talked about at the end. I still see it as that we need these two approaches because I think we really need the ownership at the grassroots level, which is where the participatory M&E focuses, and getting them engaged and involved, the volunteers, the OVC caretaker groups, and that will really involve the grassroots level, inform the grassroots level. That information doesn't necessarily go into the M&E system, the national system. It's kept at the grassroots level for them to make decisions at that level, whereas the community, the 30 by cluster survey would be part of the big M&E system, and that data would be captured in the national system and be used to make the national level and district level decisions on the programs. Any other questions? Heidi?
Yeah, I guess I have more of a comment, but I mean, I guess I turn it into a question. I mean, I'm very interested to see that you're proposing the 30 by cluster household sample. I think there's been a lot of talk about the need for some sort of like rapid sampling methodology to fill in these gaps. I mean, not just in Tanzania, but it's a strategy that could potentially be applied elsewhere.
Right.
And there are questions about potential limitations about that, you know, biases that are introduced in that sampling strategy that I know that there's been some ideas about how to go about and test whether there's, to look at potential biases and see to what extent that they're a problem or not.
Right.
And also that then you have that information to weigh against, like, I'm willing to accept that bias because I'm getting this much more information, whereas I wouldn't have otherwise. So at least it gives you some
right.
And that we've tried proposing that. I mean, this is coming from ICF and Ani's group and some of the work that they've done there. And I mean, so this is just putting more I don't know, to me, like justification behind that kind of work.
Right.
But also, I'm interested, would you comment on, but I also think that those kind of rapid sample surveys have potential elsewhere at a subnational level, you know, so like at the district level, to provide some information on outcomes. How is USAID's reaction to that, and are they, because mm-hmm. it would be a new thing that they have to fund.
Right. So Heidi was asking about USAID's reaction to the 30 by cluster and the biases that could be in the 30 by cluster survey. I think for us, working with OVC and HBC programs that are reliant on volunteers right now for the data, I think we're willing to take some of the biases. I think we'll still have better quality data coming out of the rapid assessments versus having the volunteers collect the data. And right now it's a census. You know, the volunteers are going to each household to collecting data, and that's just not really working. And the data is incomplete. They're not filling in all the information, even on the forms where they're supposed to be collecting. So we think we'd get better quality data with the 30 cluster survey and with a bias that we're willing to accept, because it'll still be somewhat better, if not much better, than what we're currently getting from the volunteers. USAID has been very open to it. I've had two discussions with the Washington team, and they're quite open and want to see us try to do this, and so we're looking at piloting it in Tanzania. We may come up with the approach this year and then maybe implement next year and maybe a district or two in Tanzania and see how it goes, and then report back to USAID to say this is what we found, and this is the suggestion we make for moving forward. And they are very open to see what this shows.
Actually, let me ask a quick follow-up question. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for your community trace and verify work with the LQAS, if you do that?
I'm not certain. I haven't thought through it exactly. It may still be relevant, definitely in the DQA aspects it'll be relevant, because they're still looking to see if what's being captured in the records is still what's happening. The IPs are still going to be collecting some of their own program data. I don't think they're going to make that all go away. So it's making sure that what the IPs have in their systems is what's really actually happening on the ground. But I think we need to think about that a little bit more. Jim?
I have a question about, you described the participatory component of identifying the needs, mm-hmm. which of those are being met. Could you say something about cycling back around to the community with findings and empowering them or enabling them to be involved in how those needs become met?
Mm-hmm.
There could be facility individuals who are representing facilities. There could be people who are taking care of OVCs in their homes. There could be any number of stakeholders could be involved in that. I'm just wondering how the data are then used to make the necessary changes.
Right. Well, right now, so Jim wants to know about how we could involve other stakeholders to get the data back to the communities and the decisions they're making in the participatory way. Right now, we're really focusing on even getting them to understand data they're collecting and why it's important, so we're not quite at the use part yet. I think that'll be coming along. When I start thinking about the M&E system, because we're going to be working on that with the Department of Social Welfare, later this year, it really is trying to get data in the hands at each level. So what makes the most sense at each level? So the national level and the district level, we have decision support tools that are maybe based on the computer where they can pull up charts and graphs. And then through the participatory approach, maybe we have parasocial workers or the CBOs go and work with the volunteer groups and show them some of the data that, what they've been collecting in a more simplified way. So maybe it's hand-drawn charts and graphs, or maybe they can even print out what the computer has pulled up, and then they can show it to the volunteer groups and start engaging them around that. We're not there right now, but I do see it as one of the prongs that I want to work on in the future when we start developing the new M&E system.
So in the absence of data to make decisions,
mm-hmm.
perhaps because of the inability to understand data or know how to use it, on what basis?
Some of it is same practice as usual. We've just been doing it this way. There is some data being used. The IPs are using some data to make their decisions and do their work plans. There is, I guess they look at what other their other country programs are doing. I've seen some of that happening, and we should try this in Tanzania. So there is, I think it's several different things that are happening, but we do need, and USA Tanzania does want to start having more evidence-based decision-making happening and to start having them value the data and then start using the data on a routine basis to make the decisions. So that's what our next step is to start working on that rather than their gut instinct or what they've done always done in the past.
Don has a couple questions online. The first question from Joseph Membrizi. Hi, Don. Thanks for the presentation. How different or how does the tool complement the annual OVC register?
Okay. The OVC register, at least in Tanzania, is just a list of the most vulnerable children that have been identified in the different villages that is sent up to district level. So if you're talking about the Community Trace and Verify tool, then this would be taking a sample of the kids that are in that register and seeing if they'd actually received the services that have been listed by the IPs that were implementing in that district. The participatory M&E tool would be more of a, it's not even really related to the register. It's more of a grassroots effort to get volunteers to start appreciating data and understanding how data can be powerful to them at their level.
Okay. I have a question here from Chuck Peel. Thanks, Don. My colleague here would like to know if the representative sample survey is different from the DHS and what information is collected.
I believe the representative population survey, the three prong on the new approach that I did mention would be that DHS would be one of the tools. It would be the DHS and the AIS, MIS that would go in between. If you had a DHS 1 year, 2 years later you normally have an AIS, MIS, and then 2 years later you have another DHS.
Okay. And a question from Maxwell. What is the recommendation on improving data collection, train the volunteers we already have, or actually identifying a separate group of data collectors, such as a college and university students? What is your recommendation?
For me, personally, I think if we start getting them to use data, so which is why we started doing the participatory M&E approach with the volunteer level, then they can start appreciating the information. And if your program's going to continue to use volunteers to collect routine information, then this may be the best approach is to get them to improve the data quality. Because if they start using the information for their own decision-making at the grassroots level, then the data quality should start improving because they don't want to use bad information to make their decisions. From a Tanzania perspective, since we are trying to work within the government system, we would not recommend going out and getting university students to do the data collection because that may not be sustainable by the government in the future. They may not have enough money to do it. So we're looking at, like for the 30 cluster samples, possibly using the parasocial workers that are part of the government structure in certain districts, and it's expanding across the country. But in other countries, it may be a different model that you could use where you could use university programs. But Tanzania is really moving towards government sustainability, and so therefore we wouldn't want to go outside for the routine monitoring.
Any other questions from the room? Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph, Chuck, and Maxwell, for your questions. We really appreciate you submitting questions in, and thank you to everyone here in the room also to keep the dialogue going. We have participants online, and so that you know how to continue the conversation, visit Child Status Network. The Child Status Network can be found on the Measure Evaluation website under Networks. You can join the listserv if you have not already to submit questions. The moderator will send questions to Don if you have any follow-up questions. Don, I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us today and presenting your work. This is another example of how our country teams are implementing tools in the field that are producing examples and models that we can share more widely. Okay, one more question from Joseph. What do you consider as the lots and supervision area while using LQAS approach?
Yeah.
And how efficient are the volunteers in applying LQAS methodology, especially regarding the benchmarks and interpretation?
We've been using the village level as the lot, so we would sample off the village registry of most vulnerable children. And we haven't been currently using volunteers to collect this data. We've been using our, when we piloted, we used our a subcontractor to do it, and what we're doing now with the DQA is that's measure staff as well as subcontracting staff that'll be implementing it. And when we do, if we do implement the 30 by cluster biannual, it'll be trained parasocial workers who'll be implementing it, and we're hoping there'll be some sort of remuneration. These guys are Form 4 leavers, so they have a bit more education level, and there is a very rigid curriculum for their program that we could work with to try to implement a session on doing the 30 by cluster sampling. And they also have a parasocial worker supervisor that sits at the district that would be able to monitor the implementation of the assessment.
Good. All right, we have a question from Pascal. I want to know if Measure Evaluation is planning to build capacity of IPs to encourage its staff to use the data they collected.
Well, Measure Evaluation is currently doing this, and we are continuing to do it. We hold data demand and use workshops at least one a year with the IP staff, and we've also started integrating sessions in our general ME trainings on data use and within our mentoring work that we're doing with IP staff.
And how can people find out about those workshops?
Unfortunately, we have to be invited by Measure, and you have to be an IP that's undergoing a DQA by Measure Evaluation Tanzania.
Okay. Chuck Pill, what data are collected by the partners or IPs, and what data are collected by the community volunteers, and how do they complement?
The data that's collected by the partners IPs are the four indicators that I mentioned at the beginning. So it's the nutritional status, the economic strengthening, the one course service, and the HBC service. Currently, a lot of the IPs are using their volunteers to get that information, and then they are aggregating it up with their CBOs. So it is all currently volunteer collected.
Okay. How can people find out more about the community choice and verify tool?
You can email Gretchen or myself, and then we can get you the tool and the two-page process guide on the tool.
Okay.
Can't remember if it's posted on the website yet or not.
So look for the website. Okay, so the tool, we'll get it up on the website soon. Visit www.measureevaluation.org to follow and to stay abreast of events and news. Also join Child Status Network, and you also can receive a copy of the tool there. I think that wraps it up. Again, if you have any follow-up questions, just follow or visit the network. And I want to thank everyone for their attendance and their participation, and we hope you have a great day.
Thank you, everyone.